Nighton Arena. Kevin MacDonald tells another real-life story in his new film, The Mauritanian. And Finian Collins explores the delights of the cello in his festival, Cellissimo. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. The Oscar-winning Scottish filmmaker Kevin MacDonald is one of those uniquely talented directors who's as comfortable making a documentary as he is making a dramatic feature. Just a few months after releasing the documentary Life in a Day 2020, an unflinching account of how COVID impacted around the world, Kevin brings us the feature film The Mauritanian, which tells the true story of Mohamedou Oul Slahi, an electrical engineer who spent 14 years in Guantanamo Bay without ever being charged. The film stars Jodie Foster and Benedict Cumberbatch, with Taha Rahim playing Mohamedou himself. The Mauritanian will be released on Amazon Prime Video on April the 1st. And delighted to be joined by Kevin MacDonald to talk to us about the film. We did speak to you about Life in a Day 2020 just back in February, but great to have you back with us again this evening, Kevin.
Nice to be back. Nice to be a regular.
Yes, well, indeed, you're welcome anytime. And at the speed you make films, we could be talking to you in a couple of months again. At any rate, the Mauritanian, this story of a man who was detained in Guantanamo Bay, as I said, for a very long time without any charge. When it first crossed your desk, or the idea of making a film was first mooted, were you a little bit wary about taking on the project?
I was a bit wary because I didn't think there was any point in revisiting the war on terror unless we did it in a different way and unless we could make a film that would reach a wider audience, you know, not just speak to the already converted. And I read Mohamedou's book, which was called Guantanamo Diary, and I thought it was an amazing document because it's the only book written inside Guantanamo Bay. But I couldn't really see how to make a film out of it. And then the producer said, just speak to Mohamedou himself. And he lives in Mauritania, which, for those of you who don't know, and that's me and everybody else probably, but before this, Mauritania is on the west coast of Africa. It's a big chunk of the Sahara Desert. It's a huge country, but it's virtually unknown. So three million people in it. They're mostly, or they have until recently, been mostly nomadic people. And I spoke to him by Skype, and he was so not what I expected. You know, somebody who's been in Guantanamo for almost 15 years. He'd only been out for a year at that stage. And I thought I'd find an angry, bitter man. And instead, he was joyful and sweet and very, very funny. And also just incredibly intelligent and had interesting observations on his experience. And I thought, this is a character I want to make a film about.
As you said, there's a scene, I can't remember the specific moment it happens in the film, where he talks about the Arabic word for forgiveness and the Arabic word for free are both, it's the same word that means free and means forgiveness. And it really gives us an insight into the mind of this man and how he has actually coped with what he went through in Guantanamo Bay.
Yes, you see, in many ways, the film is, as surprising as it might sound, it's a very, really uplifting film, actually. It's a very inspirational film because it's really about injustice and the injustice that was meted out to, you know, totally innocent Muslim men who were caught up in the world on the war on terror, which was many, many thousands of them, and including, they reckon, about 85% of the people who ended up in Guantanamo. You know, those people experienced the absolute worst end of America. You know, there was no outlet for them to be able to speak to their families. There was no outlet for them to sort of request a lawyer to begin with. And so Mohamedou was treated terribly, but what he combated that by forgiving the people who mistreated him and who tortured him. And because he said to me, you know, that by forgiving them, I was able to set myself free. Otherwise, I was eaten up by rage and anger. Yeah. I thought there's something so wonderful and inspiring about that.
The other thing, there's a statistic that comes towards the end of the film as well. 779 prisoners, 8 convictions, three of which were overturned on appeal. That's an extraordinary statistic, just to give an idea of the sort of numbers that were involved. But you mentioned there, Kevin, this idea of, you know, speaking to a man in this situation. While you wouldn't excuse it, I'm sure, but did you somehow understand, given that the early events in the film are in 2002, were not even 12 months beyond 9/11 the point we get the beginning of the story, could you understand perhaps the rage, the emotions that had driven the type of treatment that was meted out in Guantanamo Bay, even though I'm not saying excuse it, but could you understand where that rage came from?
I 100% do. And so does Mahamadou, by the way. He understands why he was a suspect. He just doesn't understand why he wasn't treated in a fair way according to the law. Mm. And, you know, one of the most touching things about his story is that he talks about how, as a young man growing up in a dictatorship in Mauritania and then as a student in Germany, he admired American justice and he admired European justice because he thought, that's what I would like in my home country. That's what the Arab world needs, you know. And so when he arrived in Guantanamo, he actually was relieved. He thought, oh, thank goodness, I'm going to now be given the justice I deserve. But, you know, America was traumatized and that trauma went, you know, still ongoing, but I remember in the months and the immediate years after 9/11, how, you know, it was a subject you couldn't talk to Americans about. Any sort of argument that wasn't just pure agreement with their position was greeted with rage. And that's what happens, obviously, when people are traumatized, especially for America, because they'd never been attacked except for Pearl Harbor, you know, in their entire history. I think the British attacked them in 1815 or something, but after that it was Pearl Harbor. So yeah, I can understand the trauma completely, but I think the intellectual theme of the film is about the importance of the rule of law and what happens when you sidestep it or break through it.
So enter Nancy Hollander, played by Jodie Foster, and Stuart Couch, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, again, two real life characters. The Nancy Hollander character, or person, did you know? She has defended so many people in impossible situations and really believes in the rule of law. The Stuart Couch story is kind of more interesting in some ways, in that the journey that he makes is quite extraordinary. One of his friends was in one of the planes that was flown into one of the Twin Towers.
He was the co-pilot. One of his best friends was the co-pilot on one of the planes that flew into the Twin Towers.
So you might understand where his attitudes might be coming from.
Absolutely. And you know, you see in this character that Benedict Cumberbatch plays, you see somebody who is, you know, Republican, right-wing Republican at that, an evangelical Christian, a military man through and through, and he's become a military lawyer, and he gets given the task of prosecuting this man who is suspected of recruiting some of the 9/11 terrorists.
Let's listen to a clip featuring him then, Cumberbatch as Stuart Couch, in a scene with Jodie Foster as Mahamadou's attorney Nancy Hollander, sparring with each other over what could be called a very tense beer, I think it's safe to say.
The law says you get open file discovery, and I want you to have discovery. That way, when I beat you, your client will have nothing to hide behind.
You sound very sure of that outcome.
You haven't seen what I've seen. Let me ask you, I understand everyone has a right to a defense, but doesn't it bother you at all, working for someone like this?
I'm not just defending him, I'm defending the rule of law.
How very Ignatian of you.
I didn't know that they studied the Jesuits in the Marine Law School.
We like to fully consider a problem before we blow it up.
My turn. Let me ask you. What if you're wrong?
We're not.
What if you are? You built this place. You abandoned all of your principles, all of your laws, and you were wrong.
And that's Jodie Foster and Benedict Cumberbatch there in a scene from Mauritanian, and director Kevin MacDonald speaking to me about it this evening. It really opens up. It's an important turning point in the film that the couch character has discovered certain things that are making him feel a little bit uncomfortable as well. I don't want to get lost in the legal morass, but you might explain, Kevin, what a memorandum for the record is. These are frightening things, MFRs as they're referred to.
Yes, I mean, you make a film like this, which is about, you know, the law and how it's bent, and you obviously have to go quite, you know, burrow quite deep into legalese. And what was one of our challenges in the film was kind of like, oh, you have all these acronyms, one of which is MFR. How do you explain which ones are important and which ones are just sort of wallpaper? And MFR is very important. MFR is the memorandum for the record. That is actually what is written down by a guard who is observing an interrogation. So when these interrogations were going on, and some of them devolved into torture, as we now know, notes of exactly what was happening and who was present were made by somebody on the other side of a bit of, you know, one-way mirror. And Couch is trying to find these original records of actually what happened. And that's his kind of mission in the film. And when he does finally find them, at the same time as Nancy Hollander gets her hands on something similar, he realizes that everything is not as it seems. And those documents, I mean, it's a film which, I guess, it's a legal thriller, and it tries to make documents sexy in some way.
Yeah, it is. Well, you do it because we see redacted documents, and then as we're seeing those documents being read, we're actually seeing, I presume, probably the more watchable, if that's a very bad choice of word, but the bits that you can manage to keep your eyes on, the torture that was meted out on Slahi and indeed others in Guantanamo, I suppose you had to go for probably in some ways, the lower end of that torture, some of the higher,
We had a lot of discussion about this. I mean, Mahamadou was probably the worst tortured person in Guantanamo. Because the more he denied having done anything, and because he was so clever and a bit of a smart aleck, to be honest, the more good excuses he had, the more they became convinced they were just excuses, and they got harder and harder and harder upon him. And so if you read his book, you see the sort of full range of what was meted out to him. In the film, we try to keep that to, you know, one little section of the film. And you know, there's a lot of debate amongst us about, you know, what can we show? We don't want this to be a film which an audience can sit through. And we decided in a way that what we would do is go very subjective, you know, go inside his head and try to represent the kind of effect it has on him psychologically more than actually the objective torture, you know, which we've seen before in films like Zero Dark Thirty. But in this case, it's very different because you've grown to know this character, and you've grown to learn about his past and all sorts of things, and then you see this happen to him. So it's deeply personal, and I think, you know, my aim in making this film was to make a film, as I said right at the beginning, that it was accessible to a wide audience, and it operates like a thriller, and which is entertaining, and it has some humour, as you hear from the Benedict Cumberbatch, Jodie Foster. But obviously, at the end of it, it is a serious. It's got a very serious point to make.
And an extraordinary moment must have been when Mahamadou Ould Slahi himself visited the set during filming. I presume nowhere near any of those days when you were filming the torturing scenes.
No, he wasn't there when we did that. But actually, for him to come back to our set, which was very closely modelled on what he had told us he'd experienced. So he had done little drawings for us of what his part of the prison looked like. So, because remember about Guantanamo is that it developed and developed and changed. And, you know, you see a lot of pictures online, and a lot of them are different periods of prison, or they're not actually the real prison. Whatever. So he identified for us, you know, this is what my cell looked like. And he'd do a drawing, he'd do approximate measurements, the colours, everything. And he was really concerned that the physical environment be represented properly, because he said that environment is a secret. Still to this day, it's a secret, and I want that to be seen by the world. But, you know, that side of the film was we were filming in Guantanamo when he, in doing some of the interrogation scenes, but not the torture scenes, when he came to visit us in South Africa. And he only lasted about half an hour. He couldn't stand it. It was too traumatizing for him. And he went home to his hotel, and I phoned him that night. And being, you know, Mohamedou, who's always very funny, I said to him, you know, are you okay? He said, oh, no, it was just, you know, it's incredibly boring, isn't it, watching an actor say the same lines over and over again. It's like you were torturing them, Kevin.
Yeah, it's a rather less harmful type of torture, though, to be fair.
Anyone who's been on a film set knows that, you know, the boredom can verge on torture at times.
Just before we finish up, Kevin, I mentioned this thing about real life stories. We spoke about it the last time we spoke as well, and how much you mentioned at that time how real life can be far more stranger than fiction, as we all know only too well. So a documentary about Oprah Winfrey on the way. Will it include a royal interview?
Unfortunately, I wasn't allowed in during that particular encounter. No, but I'm doing a film about her. It's very early stages. But I just think she's a fascinating person because she's affected our culture, particularly American culture, but world culture as well, so much. And yet, you know, we only really know about her what she has revealed in, you know, in her show. So she has given me permission to dig around and to, you know, talk to her, but also talk to all her friends and colleagues and whatever.
And find the equivalent of the memorandum for the record from the person who was sitting watching it happen. One thing I want to finish, I mean, I mentioned both Jodie Foster and Benedict Cumberbatch and their performances. We can't leave out Shailene Woodley, who plays Nancy Hollander's assistant, Terry Duncan. But really, the man who I want to finish with is Rahim. His performance as Mohamedou Ould-Salahi Taha Rahim, it's an extraordinary performance. He's charming, he's vulnerable, he's so many things. What a set of qualities he has.
He's an amazing actor, and he should be he should have got an Oscar nomination for it. He's on the BAFTA nominations, but he's not got an Oscar nomination. He should have. He's absolutely brilliant, and maybe some of your listeners might have seen him in a fantastic French film from 10 years ago called Un Prophète, A Prophet.
Yeah.
The kind of gangster film in prison where that was his first proper role, and he's amazing and mesmerizing in that. And I've known him sort of since then. We worked together, you know, shortly after that film. We've been friends since then. And yeah, this is a stand-up performance. People might have also seen him in the BBC series The Serpent.
Yes. Yeah, he was in there as well. Well, listen, lovely to speak with you again this evening, Kevin. I look forward to talking to you about the Oprah Winfrey documentary when that gets made, whenever that may be. There's probably other projects in the pipeline before that, though, are there?
No, that's the next one in line. I'm looking forward to it, and let's talk again.
Right, great. And listen, I will finish up with a clip of Taha Rahim, but great to speak with you, Kevin. Thanks for being with us this evening.
Lovely to chat. Bye-bye.
That's Kevin MacDonald there, director of The Mauritanian. And in this scene that we're about to hear from the film, Jodie Foster as Nancy Hollander tries to understand what has been happening in detention to her client, Mohamedou Ould-Salahi, played by Taha Rahim.
Why didn't you tell us?
They're nothing. Like fantasy, yeah. None of that happened.
You signed them.
They made me.
They made you as in they coerced you?
What do you think?
I don't know. You tell me. Did they coerce you? But you gotta tell me what happened, Mohamedou.
You asked me to set fire to this place, but I'm still sitting.
Then write it down. All right, that's what the pages are for. Write it down. You need to tell me the truth. You need to tell me what happened to you. I can't defend you. Do you understand that?
I don't need to tell you nothing. Whatever I say, it doesn't matter. This island, I'd die here. Outside, my family, my brother, their lives go on. Tara's life goes on. But me here, I'm like a statue. Now you will leave too, and your life will go on.
What the hell do you know about my life? This is it. This is my life. I spend my time in places like this helping people like you. That's what I do. But don't question my commitment to your case.
The case. The case. The case. You're not committed to me. A person! No. You think I'm guilty? Say it.
Tahar Rahim as Mahamudu Oud Slahi and Jodie Foster as Nancy Hollander there in that scene from The Mauritanian, directed by Kevin MacDonald. The film is available to stream on Amazon Prime Video from April 1st.